A reading from the Hebrew Bible, the second book of Samuel. This is the story of David and Mephibosheth. David asked, "Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of Saul's household called Ziba. They summoned him to appear before David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" "At your service," he replied. The king asked, "Is there no one still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness?" Ziba answered the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He is lame in both feet." "Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, "He is at the house of Machir, son of Ammiel, in Lo Debar." So King David had him brought from Lo Debar, from the house of Machir, son of Ammiel. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. David said, "Mephibosheth!" "At your service," he replied. "Don't be afraid," David said to him, "for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table." Mephibosheth bowed down and said, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's steward, and said to him, "I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "Your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and all the members of Ziba's household were servants of Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He was lame in both feet.
Kia ora koutou. I have two stories of disability and faith. The first one, I read the daily Taizé Bible readings, and one last week was Acts 3, verses 1 to 10. It concerns a man lame from birth who was brought to the temple as Peter and John arrived. He'd been carried to beg for alms. Peter said to him, "I have no silver and gold, but I give you what I have. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk." And he raises him up to his feet. Always the story is told about the man healed, walking and leaping, and the apostles. But what about the background people who carried him every day to seek alms? What about the family at home who cared for him? What if the healing story is seen for them too? The relief of their burden. What if disability is realized to be a burden carried by others too, that it is at a cost, a great loss of their hopes too. What about them? They are real and often overlooked, or their role called saintly, but they are human and have dreams and agonies too. They are Veronica, and they are Simon of Cyrene, and they are Jesus too. And they get tired and worn out, and sometimes they get little rest. I know many of you help carry the pallet for someone, and I hope someone will carry you when you need it too. The second story is about grace and the beyond. With MS, my life has become smaller and diminished as aspects of myself come off. When I could no longer do active things, I thought I'd work and study more. When I couldn't work and study failed because of mental fatigue, I thought I'll do voluntary work. When I couldn't do that due to poor mobility, I thought I will be a really sociable person, but I didn't have much to talk about. Then I thought I'll become spiritually developed, but then I really learned about ego. I thought I will look to the great saints like Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, for they tell you the steps, and also Pema Chodron, a Buddhist nun, who, on how to become a bodhisattva. But I read them, their steps and their way, and I knew I could not achieve their greatness. Then I stumbled on, or maybe the book found me, The Cloud of Unknowing. And the copy I have has this, what could only be described as religious pornography on the cover. Don't be put off. The publisher has not read the book and they've put on this horrendous painting. The anonymous writer is a monk 700 years ago, and he was saying, love is the highest cognitive power, far superior to the powers of reason and intellect, and love will not mislead you, and for Jesus can well be loved but cannot be thought. And just realize he is a monk 700 years ago. He said, lift up your heart to the Lord with a gentle stirring of love, desiring him for his own sake and not for his gifts. Now you can translate that, it's all right. And he's not saying throw away your instinct, your intellect. It has its limits though, and the heart will take you beyond. I felt so relieved, for my mind has its limits, yet grace comes again and again. When at my wit's end, grace comes. As Anne Lamott, an author, says, grace always bats last. What I realized is my little mind wanted some success somewhere. Man, if it wasn't visible as worthy work, I would do perfect interior stuff. But over and over, I've had to learn to let go, strip away, shrug off, scar off, and forget the mastery of anything. Then grace comes. And again, Anne Lamott quotes, the Gulf Stream will flow through a straw as long as it is aligned at not at cross purposes. And Thomas Merton says, and it's a wonderful quote, and I can give it the whole thing to you if you'd like it, but I've reduced it a little bit. The next step is not a step. That apparently the small entity that is you disappears into love, small L, dwelling in love, large L. There are billions of ways home, but I think loss of something defining, like physical or cognitive function, as being one for me. Namaste. Let's go and sit in this.
Namaste.
The Gospel reading is from Matthew chapter 2. When the astrologers had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel. For those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. For the word in Scripture, for the word among us, for the word within us, we give thanks.
This gospel reading from Matthew was used in our reflections on our New Year's Day service this year, and it feels very relevant to revisit it today. We recognise the desperation of refugees fleeing from places like Syria today, with that of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus fleeing to Egypt. Regardless of whether these events in Matthew's gospel are historically true, the reality is that these things have always happened and are still happening all around us. Innocent people suffer in our world as a result of human pride, greed, fear, and hate every day. Tragically, the action of Herod is nothing less than common. As I reflected on our gospel this week, my thoughts turned to a remarkable woman I know, Pani Thomas, who lives in central Otago. I got to know Pani when I lived in Alexandra. She was the wife of a work colleague I was working with at NIWA. She came to New Zealand from Cambodia as a sponsored refugee in 1987. She is a talented dressmaker and was always warm and welcoming towards me. We enjoyed walks and conversations together, but she didn't share too much of her past. Then when I was living here in Wellington in 2011, she sent me a copy of her story that she had just published with writer Pauline Cartwright, who was also her neighbour. It was called Still Alive, A Survivor's Story. And it was read as a serial book on Radio New Zealand, and I noticed they've still got it on their website if you're interested to listen to it. As I read, I was so shocked at what she'd endured. But I knew I could never truly understand what she'd been through. and hard labour camps from 1975 to 1979. She lost her husband and her three children, and almost all of her extended family. She then spent 8 years trying to rebuild her life, the last of those 2 years in a refugee camp on the Thai-Cambodian border, before coming to New Zealand in 1987 as a sponsored refugee. I reread some of her story this week, and what struck me was how quickly she and her fellow citizens went from the daily lives they knew to being thrown out of their homes and forced into the countryside for hard labour. From one day hearing on the radio the Khmer Rouge had taken the capital, Phnom Penh, to later that same day, soldiers on tanks in their town telling people to get out of their houses. All freedom and everything that was familiar to them taken away almost instantly. Hani's story and experiences, sadly, are not unique. There are over 65 million forcibly displaced people today in the world, a mass of humanity on the move because of persecution. I know there are many of you who have been much more involved than me in resettling and supporting refugees in our community and advocating for New Zealand to increase its refugee quota. This morning instead I'll reflect on the work of Christian World Service who are supporting Syrian refugees in Jordan and Lebanon. Syria may have faded from our headlines, but life there is still extremely hard. Nearly half of the 13.5 million people affected have fled the country. Inside Syria and the United Nations and agencies like the ACT Alliance are finding it difficult to deliver humanitarian supplies. Out of Syria, the refugees are struggling to keep on going on very limited rations and with little support. I've got some quotes from some of the refugees living in the Za'atari refugee camp in northern Jordan. Life here is difficult. We lack clean water, and when we go to the toilets, there are a lot of people, and we have to wait in line. I fetch water for my mum, and there is always fighting going on, says Rickard. Ali's father runs a small cafe, and according to the ACT Alliance staff, Ali works in the cafe instead of going to school. Ali says he spends his days playing with friends. I'm bored. The toilets are dirty, and the kitchens are crowded. I awake early and eat breakfast, then I play with my friends. We live 6 persons in one tent. CWS, or Christian World Service, who is the development agency of the New Zealand Churches, works with the Department of Service to Palestinian Refugees of the Middle East Council of Churches to support Syrian refugees. DSPR was set up by Palestinian Christians determined to help Palestinians of all religions made homeless in 1949. Working in Jordan and Lebanon, they struggle to meet the many needs of Syrian and Palestinian refugees. They have decades of experience and networks necessary to mobilise support from their host communities. DSPR provides emergency food parcels and cash vouchers, healthcare, education, children's fun activities, and emotional support. Their staff work with the utmost compassion to give refugees support that is more than the rations or medicine. They have set up self-help groups so refugees learn from and support each other. By working with refugees who have been there for decades and the newer arrivals from Syria, they ease the tensions created by the scarcity of help and try to build stronger communities. As members of the DSPR team say themselves, there are realities we all share, regardless of our nationality, language, or individual tastes. As we need food, so we need emotional support, love and kindness and appreciation. Last year, CWS ran a fundraiser called Operation Refugee to raise funds for DSPR that I took part in and many of you generously supported. The challenge was to have 5 days of eating the same rations as a Syrian refugee. Chickpeas, lentils, rice, a little bit of salt, fish, flour and oil. I did find it a challenge. I enjoy variety in my diet, and not being able to eat what I wanted and feeling a little bit less energetic made me appreciate what I take for granted. What it made me realise too, though, is that it's not just a lack of food that makes life for refugees challenging. It's a loss of freedom and the barriers that are put in their way. Language, different education curriculums, lack of access to affordable healthcare and employment opportunities. But things like Operation Refugees do make a difference. With your generous support and along with 71 other people last year, we raised $42,000. And this year, 100 people are taking part and they're aiming to raise $80,000. Trish Murray from CWS's International Programs Coordinator wrote just this week, "I've just returned from Jordan and Lebanon, where DSPR is making a real difference in the lives of refugees. Seeing the enthusiasm of children back at school and participating in Children's Forum was a real sign of hope for the future. Operation Refugee and your participation will keep this hope alive." I think there is value in these fundraisers in not only raising awareness and money, but also giving hope to refugees that we are with them. Emotional support and connection is as vital as practical aid. We share the same world, and we are all connected. In choosing to follow Jesus, we are challenged to live out God's radical hospitality here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and in the wider world. Let us work together in whatever ways we can, supporting initiatives like the Operation Refugee, helping resettle refugees here in our own communities, and advocating to increase our refugee quota. Also, advocating to help to reduce the barriers to enable refugees to fully participate in their new lives here. As Pauline Mackay, CWS Director, says, every one of the 65.3 million refugees has a story and dreams for the future.
To express my thanks to Jenny and Sonia for their contributions and to say to you that they are all printed together with what I will say in a minute and up the back of the church if you want to take a copy home, and they're on the website. So we've heard from Jenny and Sonia something of the experience of being disabled and of being exiled from home, from two of many perspectives. Each person's story is unique and each story is individual. The experience of being disabled is life-altering. The experience of being dislocated is a world-altering experience too. And each has the potential to leave us alienated, beaten, and despairing. All of us have experiences, maybe not disablement or dislocation in the way that's been described today, but experiences that rock our world, and we fear that they will leave us desolate. Jesus looked into the eyes of his disciples as he prepared to leave them and saw something of that desolation, their fear for the future. And he said to them, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will pray to God who shall give you another comforter who shall be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, for the world cannot see the Spirit or know the Spirit. You know the Spirit who abides with you and shall be in you. I will not leave you desolate. I will come unto you. Yet a little while and the world sees me no more, but you see me." He promises them the Spirit and he says deliberately, and I can imagine slowly, "I will not leave you desolate." Whatever our circumstances, we are not alone. Deborah Lampshire, who won the ACC Supreme Attitude Awards in 2016, was confined in mental hospital for 17 years from the age of 17 to 34. She still hears voices, yet now she is a teaching fellow at Auckland University, where she teaches her compassionate method for helping the mentally ill take control of their lives. And she echoed Jesus' words when she spoke to Judy Bailey after the awards last year. Judy writes this: "Now she, Deborah, is teaching others about the road to recovery. What does she tell people? Quote, that you're never alone. Even in the darkest depths, know deep in yourself that this is endurable. Her advice to practitioners: if you don't believe that I can get well, then I can't believe it. You are the person who has my back. Never underestimate the power of love. Never underestimate your ability to impact the lives of others." Deborah is able to teach people to get well. Some other illnesses, people also know that they will never get well, and so they need to keep on living with the illness as they are. May we all remember that we are not alone. The Spirit is with us. We are not alone. This community surrounds us. We are not alone. We have within us the ideal companion, ourself. We are not alone. Others have walked this path before us. We are not alone. There are those who walk this path with us today. We are not alone. We are not left desolate.